You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the Relationship Engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio. Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today is the most profound show ever for 90 Day Soulmate. It's Showmate. 90 Day Showmate. Da, da, da,
da, da. Show me.
Da, 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 da. Why we say it's the most profound show ever is that this is an introduction to the book 90 Day Soulmate. What I mean by that is we did research. We did research on recognizing your soulmate and wanted to get information that would help support the different concepts that are in the book 90 Day Soulmate. So today we're going to do recognizing your soulmate, and we're going to discuss what is incorporated in the first two chapters of 90 Day Soulmate from a standpoint of research and studies and what they show about finding your soulmate. How does that sound?
Sounds good.
Oh,
let's do it.
Let's do it. If I get the right one here. Do, 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 do. Okay, recognizing your soulmate. How do you recognize your soulmate, Lisette?
I have to open my eyes.
So a couple of things people say is that in researching what people say when they found what they consider to be their soulmate, what they say the person would be like or how they experience that person in their life, they have an immediate and deep connection with the person. It's often described as deja vu, a familiarity, right? So you're like feeling like you've known this person your whole life, or you've known them before your life and during your life and after your life. It's that mating of a connection, right? That connection. Yeah. So this is a very connected show for us as well, because this is the essence of how we met, 90 Day Soulmate, the story of love. It is how Lisette, it is the process that she used to find me, and now this is, 13 years of research, programs, shows, talks.
Try to increase our knowledge about.
As we increase our knowledge and share what we've learned along the way. So we're doing this from experience, as well as we try to do everything research-based. We're engineers, we're not psychologists, although I went to school for psychology. But first, we are engineers. So we look at everything from that standpoint.
Engineer of love.
Engineers of love. Well, there's not a degree in engineering of love, but there's engineering degrees with research into love.
There you go.
That's what we are. That's how we do it. That's where we're called the engineers of love.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back to this thing here. We're talking about what else? How do you recognize that person that fits you so well that is your soulmate? Another one people say is they have shared values and core beliefs. That somebody who you connect with at the soul should have this innate similarity. You should like agree on many things. There may be different, and we'll talk about this as we go on, there may be different ways you approach things. You may have different opinions, but in essence, at your core, you share beliefs and values. So that's another thing people say that helps create that strong foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Of a soulmate relationship.
I guess that you have to believe that your soulmate exists is the first step.
Oh, that's right.
Because if you don't believe, you never found.
How do you recognize something you don't believe?
Exactly.
So it's almost like the law of attraction, right?
Yeah,
first have to believe and then have this image, and then you actually start having people, things, situations attracted to you that you believe can happen, that you believe exist.
Yeah.
So, and psychologically speaking, there's hundreds of explanations as to why this is true.
Mm-hmm.
That if you don't believe something, tendency is for you to have, what is that called? A bias, you know, a cognitive bias to, well, I don't believe it. So if I even see evidence of it, I'm not going to believe the evidence.
Yeah, it's
I'm
like the disregard people it. Believe the planet is flat, so the same.
What do you mean? The planet's not flat?
No. You have to research.
It's round. I keep falling over. That's why I keep falling over.
There you go.
Especially after we go to restaurants. I don't know. Maybe I eat so much. Could be. What else? So, effortless communication.
Mm-hmm. What is that?
Well, you can have communication without many words. The need for words, it may be body language, maybe facial expressions, all those things seem natural between you. What that means is it's not like you're trying, like, I don't understand. When we first met, we had a little bit of a language barrier. But I felt down deep in Lizette's being that there was so much there that I wanted to connect to. And all the connection points that we had in our conversations, it was, if you want to say it was effortless, that it was easy to talk to Lizette.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying she's an easy woman, but it was easy to talk to her. That's what I'm saying.
Of course, yes.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
I agree.
So effortlessly being able to communicate with using a minimum of words. I don't want to say finishing each other's sentences. I was hoping you pick up on that little thing there. She's not going for it. But the ability to get your point across without having to use lots of words, to be having similar understanding. And we talk about this too, is a familiarity of backgrounds or a similarity of backgrounds too. It might be family, the family values, the cultural values, even if they're completely different cultures, is having similarity of those things. So when you use different words or different feelings associated with words, they have the similar underlying meaning to that person.
And have the ability to put in place, and sometimes they we don't understand. So in my case, I always say, what is the mean for that? Explain me more. So the conversation become more rich because I try to go deep. What are you talking
about? And so where I'm going with the cultural thing, and let's go with family especially, is that if you have a feeling of your family and the person that you met has a feeling of their family and the feeling they have of their family, how they were raised, how they communicated with their siblings, how they communicated with their parents and relatives, if that was similar to you when you were discussing things that have to do with family, it's you're coming from the same perspective. It's what's below the water. If you're an iceberg, it's the stuff that's below the water. When that stuff's similar, then when you have above the water conversations, you're actually connecting below the water also.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I hope it makes sense. I told you this is a very important show.
Yes.
I get to share with you.
Yeah, with everybody.
With everybody. Here we go. Let's get to that next thing here. We have three more ways of recognizing your soulmate. One is that you have mutual respect for each other and admiration. That's a forming. It helps form the basis of a healthy relationship, respect and admiration. A strong sense of empathy and understanding towards each other's feelings. So really wondering how the person's feeling and seeing how you can impact and help them improve that as well. Complementary strengths and weaknesses, balancing each other in various aspects. This is an interesting one, because sometimes people say, well, we have to be the same in every way to be, you know, soulmates. And sometimes soulmates are perfect puzzle pieces with each other, where the strength of one helps the weakness of the other. And the weakness of one is helped by the strength of the other. For instance, maybe I'm more on the creative side, and Lizette's more on the we need to get this done in this direction and order side. And we can combine the two to get the best of both. And we talk about when we're building or when we're, what was that called? Refinishing. We refinished our basement. We built it out. Lizette had a vision kind of for what she wanted. I would do the creative side, but then we'd have okay, let's work on it every weekend and every weekend. So she's a real taskmaster. But it keeps you on task and with a focus, a goal in mind. So we both have the same goal in mind. We want the basement to look great. But
I guess also the important part when in some area we are similar, so I feel like that. Sometimes we maybe want to be lead in something at the same time, and we feel some kind of the core connection, yeah. You know? And then that is the ability to just say, okay, let me talk. What is what we do? Because we can also have disagreement with something. And
no.
Yes.
All the time. I always say, a lot of times I say no first.
So I know that. So I'm waiting to say again.
Again and again. And finally, the third part, three more points of recognizing your soulmate is a consistent push towards personal growth. That you both have the same push towards personal growth. It doesn't mean necessarily, well, there it says it right there in the point, not necessarily only individually, but as a couple. That individually you have personal growth, and as a couple you do. You have a feeling of safety and security when you're with them, both emotionally and physically, that they're there to protect you, both physically and emotionally. Unconditional acceptance of each other, including flaws and past mistakes. We'll talk about that in a second. A shared vision of the future with similar goals and dreams. Goals and dreams help drive a relationship forward. Let's go back to that one about the unconditional acceptance piece, including flaws and past mistakes. I know how people are always trying to, like, sometimes correct the other person. One is, you don't have to accept everyone's flaws and everyone's mistakes. They may not, if you can't, that might mean that you're not meant to be together.
Mm-hmm.
It also means that you have to just leave them alone. Once you say, okay, I know what they did. I know what happened. I know how they were. Okay, I'm done with it. It's forgiving is different than forgetting. Because forgiving means I still hold on. I forgive you, though. It's still there. You just, if you go, you know that thing where you flick your hair back to, like, you don't care. Like, when you don't care about the person's mistakes and flaws because you're over it, you're beyond that, you're growing together individually and personally, that is a sign of maturity.
Yeah, but also you have to clarify, everybody has limits. So
yes.
At the moment that you can, this is not important, where I have to be angry for something that is not impact our relationship, so I do like that. But in the case that something is important, I have to say, stop. We need to talk.
So maybe we say it this way, is when you recognize somebody's your soulmate, it's because you can forgive and forget and not gloss over, but just
when
you move on from flaws and past mistakes and you're just like, okay, let's move on. That's when they're your soulmate. When you can't move on from that, then there is a conflict at the cellular level. And you don't want conflicts at the cellular level. When we come back, we're going to talk more about soulmates, how to recognize them, what you can do, and how you can better prepare yourself to meet that person or to be better connected with that person.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date, and then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions. Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Today we're talking really quickly about soulmates, how to recognize them, how to better be prepared for them. What are the things you do when you're in a soulful relationship and that you're connected at the cellular level? Why, if you haven't, why do you want to find a soulmate? Studies show that deep emotional connections enhance mental and physical health, that a soulmate is good for you in your mental and physical health. So you want to find a soulmate because it enhances your life. The concept of a soulmate does vary from culture and historically throughout the centuries, right? So it's always been changing. Research indicates that successful long-term relationships are built on mutual respect and shared values. So one of the reasons to find the soulmate, like we just talked about, is that it helps when we talk about individual growth and couple growth, but individual physical and mental health is a result of being with somebody that you're deeply connected with.
And you grew up in couple versus alone more fast, okay? I know say the people alone cannot grow up, of course, but in couple, I guess, the way this has somebody different view of you, just not yourself, create more data to improve yourself.
So somebody that you respect and admire, you will actually receive, I'll call it criticism, assessment, and perhaps correction and continuous improvement.
Oh, you're talking like me.
From that person. In comparison to somebody that you might not respect, then you might not accept that. Yeah. And that would be, so soulmates are somebody that help you. And they're very empathetic and they have empathy. They show empathy, especially when you have a flaw. Maybe they talk to you about, hey, is this something that you want to work on or not? If you do, they'll help you. And if you don't, they'll maybe just say, okay, we'll just move on.
Yeah, you know? I call you later.
Or maybe they're not your soulmate and they move on, right?
Okay.
So this is something interesting that, and I'll bring it up in two ways. So in our book, we talk about my and Lizette's journey as we meet each other. And the personal narratives in the relationship often reflect broadly on social and psychological patterns. I'm going to stop there for a moment and talk about that. Is when you learn about somebody's story of how they got to where they are when they meet you or when they met you, it kind of gives you an idea of how they develop their thinking patterns, both socially, culturally, within their family, all that. Mm-hmm. And so these personal narratives, and as a couple, our narrative, our story of how we met is really important in how we share things with others. And it's also helpful in our development. So I wanted to understand more about Lizette's process of finding me. So as we wrote the book and as we started getting interviewed on TV and on radio, we're like, oh my gosh, we need to know more. And that's when we started our study. Specifically, I went right into psychology. I started studying psychology.
I pushed you here.
Pushed me to learn more, to understand. And what we're finding in this show, as we said, is the culmination, is that we have now 13 years since the book was written. And since over those years, we've learned more and more. This was an opportunity to get research that now backs what we have in the book. So every slide you see in here is additional research points that support the points in the book. This book is only like 100, 130 pages long. But as we started doing this presentation, oh my, the amount of data and research, scientific research, not just somebody spewing off on some blog somewhere, but the amount of research that supports the points in the book two love engineers came up with was significant. And that's why this is such a important show to us, is that we want to share with you that there's a lot of data and research that back what is in this book and how it can make a change in your life in finding a soulmate or developing a deeper relationship with somebody who you believe is your soulmate.
And I guess the other important point is coming through from two engineers of psychology, so it's a different view of the human being relationship. So in this way you can see, let me see through the glasses with somebody different the psychology. And how also we can, interpret the information by our experience and how we share.
So as an engineer, I went into psychology as, I don't believe this. It's just this pseudoscience. And then you start learning about psychology and the history of it, the philosophers who had an impact, the different people who studied the brain and studied how people react and how people learn things and how people change over the time. And when we started learning stuff about how the brain changes, and like, oh my gosh, there's a science behind psychology.
And it's fascinating for
me.
It's fascinating also learn more about how is the human being in this society. So this is something that we need to keep going search.
Social psychology, individual psychology, all the ways people use psychology for therapy, for help, for improvement.
Yeah.
So, and here we are, engineers talking about psychology. Isn't that great? What else? Shared life goals. We talked about this. This is another. We determined that we had some shared life goals. Lizette wanted to retire when she was 45. No, that's not true. But
I need to wait because I have 30 something. So,
but shared life goals is a shared life goals is a predictor or shared shared life goals itself. The sharing of the goals is a predictor of long term relationship success. Right? So that's good too. What else we have here? Oh, so we get into chapter one now. We talk about the media. The media and its effect and impact on relationship perceptions, that the media often portrays idealized relationships. We all know this. You see the movies, you see the TV shows, and, well, idealized from maybe not actually idealized. I'll talk about that as well, leading to unrealistic expectations. So they may not be idealistic or idealized. They may be more romanticized, or they may be more emotionally pushing versions of relationships, you know, how it's about passion and sex and this and that and hiding stuff, that they're emotionally stirring up emotions. I mean, why would someone watch a TV show if they weren't, it wasn't
dramatic? No, so it's the way that people believe or have like the theory of what is love, because it's not easy to describe, oh, I love somebody for what? Do you know what I mean? So the way that you figure out is because you see in the movies that all the butterfly in your stomach, that is maybe bad food, but
so
yeah, there's a lot of sign that people believe, okay, that is love, because in the movies show is love, and that's it, the society learn.
So we see high paid, emotionally connected actors and actresses portraying romantic relationships with beautiful cinematic backgrounds, music, situations that make our heart go one way or the other, and we're like, oh my gosh, that is love. It's a fake scene that's supposed to represent something that in reality doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. That it's a 1.5 hour version of a 50-year relationship that is never shown, and they're actors and actresses, they're not real. We all know they're not real, but we can get caught up in that and go, wow, that's what I want, right?
And believe that.
And believe if I don't feel what I feel when I watch this show in my relationship, then my relationship is bad relationship. Studies suggest a correlation between media consumption. Oh, I love this one. Number two, look at that. Number two, studies suggest a correlation between media consumption and dissatisfaction in real life relationships. Number one, we're not media, we're an educational program. So the more you stick with us, the less of this other stuff, hopefully, that will drive you to dissatisfaction. But I heard this too. I saw a study recently that the more people are on social media, the more depressed they are. Again, they see people faking relationships on social media, always happy. The stuff they post are wonderful pictures. They see stuff in the media. The more that they, what is it, consume?
To demonstrate, yeah.
The more they consume of that stuff, the more dissatisfied they are in their personal relationships. And finally, research encourages personal engagement, a critical and personal engagement with media, social media. Be critical of it. Don't believe it. Question it. And that helps in your relationship expectations. Get them in reality. Have realistic expectations in your relationship. And therefore, you'll be able to distinguish from reality and fantasy.
Is it real? It's a fantasy.
Long-term studies reveal that lasting relationships are grounded in reality and mutual growth. Reality, not TV shows. Not reality TV, but in reality and mutual growth. Fantasy versus reality in relationships can impact satisfaction levels. And research advises focusing on communication and shared experiences to build a strong relationship foundation. So have our relationship built upon our shared experiences mm-hmm. and not what we see in a TV show.
Okay.
Or a movie. Is that good? Do you like that?
Yes.
Let's see what else we have here. The importance of self-awareness. So it is linked to healthier relationship choices and better conflict resolution when you're self-aware, aware of yourself. Reflect on yourself, how you are, how you act, how you react. Studies highlight the role of emotional intelligence in relationship success. Understand how the way you manage your emotions can impact others. And psychological research suggests that self-awareness leads to more authentic and fulfilling relationships. Self-awareness. So in our book, we talk about being self-aware of your past relationships, of your cultural, of your family, of your national, of your friends, and being aware of the impact of that relationship you've had and those things, those patterns that you've developed, which then help you have healthier relationships because you understand how you are. And maybe you can actually share that background with your partner.
And also recognizing yourself, because typical when we are in a relationship, figure out that everything is happened with the other person. Is the his fault or her fault, or did she do that for me? So watch out, because sometimes you're missing a lot of information. Be focused on the other versus yourself. How I acting? How I reacting? How I did something? So when we are in conflict, it's difficult to see yourself. So that is a self-awareness. You have to do.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions. Happiness itself is a personal responsibility. Research in positive psychology emphasizes that individual happiness is a foundation to relationship satisfaction. Again, individual happiness is the foundation. Do not look for the happiness. Don't find my happiness depends upon my mate.
Yeah.
I need to be happy. The slide itself shows a picture of a man and a woman in a balance. Just call them two partners.
And the man play guitar.
The man's playing guitar. Let's go back to the picture. I'll explain why it's important. Mm-hmm. So the man's playing guitar, and the man's got some painting going on there. Mm-hmm. A woman has a broom because she flies around the globe. Hey, it's you, baby. It's you.
The witch.
She's got a paintbrush. Mm-hmm. He looks like he's got some paintbrushes there. He looks like he's got like an old vat of wine or something there. Mm-hmm. And so it shows them individually. And then it shows them below as a couple getting together. Why is this so important? The point is that two happy people create a happy relationship. One happy person and one sour person.
Chinese food.
Sweet and sour. Hey, we got it. That's good. Don't let your relationship be sweet and sour.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions. So when you are looking to be in a wonderful relationship, if you're already in one, that's great. If you're not, make sure you're happy. You're happy with the progress in your life, happy in if it's education, if it's job, if it's your hobbies, if it's your health, Mm-hmm. If it's your exercise and what you do there, that you're happy in the things that you do.
And then you can project also these and can maybe move a lot of stuff that we have that we don't see your soulmate.
So one of the last shows we did, we talked about the emotions and how they impact the health. Happiness is one of the most profound impacts on health of all the emotions. Happiness just isn't something makes you happy, but it's your path. A lot of what makes somebody happy is the path of life. Like they're working towards a goal. And a lot of these things are, you'll hear from other people in expressions like the movement towards a worthy goal is what gives you satisfaction. We talk about an actor, actress, a musician who becomes famous and they've made it all the way to the top. And they're expecting to be super happy when they get there, and they're not.
Sometimes not.
And maybe the journey, they were happy along the journey, and then they get there and they're no longer happy because they have nowhere to go. So it's having that focus on future goals. So again, personal happiness and the responsibility for you to be happy in your own life is then what helps create an environment for two happy people to have a happy relationship.
And I know it's not easy to do, but I guess that one of the recommendations sometimes is be thank you, no? Be thankful. What do you have?
Thankful.
Thankful make you recognize and feel better. Or maybe not string happy, but maybe peaceful where you are.
Mm. So do you remember I told you I dated this woman once, many years ago. I think it was before we had color in the world. It was a black and white world. I date her, and the date goes pretty well, and we're talking at the end. We talk about becoming, you know, dating more. And she talked about that once we start dating, that everything we would do together. I would no longer go out with my friends. I would go out with her and our friends. And everything was going to be done as a couple. And I looked at it two ways. I'm like, oh, great. She's really committed to being a couple.
She's so romantic.
And then I'm like, wait a minute. There's a little bit of control going on here, too. Is it because being a couple is very important to her, or is it she has a control issue and she does and a trust issue that you can only go out together forever because I if you're out without me, I don't trust you because of something that happened in my past. Mm. Whatever the case was, I thought it was a little odd. And so 20 years later, I broke up with her. No. So that was it. So it was the one date. And when we started talking about that, it felt like this is strange.
Yeah.
So having the ability to be happy individually. And again, you saw the picture of the, and I'll go back to the picture one more time. Picture of a guy with a guitar playing some music. And it could be the woman playing guitar, playing some music. The woman doing some stuff on her own. And them coming together and doing things together is that having individual and couple goals is one of the ways to maintain a happy relationship, is that you can grow on your own and grow together.
Yeah.
Because you're not exactly the same. Mm-hmm. Did we beat this one a little bit much?
Yeah, also bring a little space of everybody. Remember in the book, The Victoria Dream, when mm-hmm. they have the sharper when we talk about I want to miss you, so
exactly
it's almost similar. So I dated with him, I traveled from Mexico to other country and just landing I have a 25 call phone in my phone.
Oh my gosh,
because he want to talk every hour. So I say, oh no, I can live with somebody in this level, you know, so want to be in contact every hour with me.
We should have put him in touch with that woman that I dated.
Can be perfect.
So it's in this book as well, while Victoria Dreams, the story of I met a woman, I went away on a business trip, I come back, and the answering machine, if you remember back in the day, we had answering machines with little tapes in them. But in any case, I come back that. And there's easily a dozen messages from the woman, which start off as, just, hey, I miss you. When are you going to be back home? To, I'm very angry at you for not calling me back yet. What's going on? And this was all of them,
and
are one after another.
She
after
break
another.
Up with you, and then
then she finally breaks up with me on the recording.
Without you did that thing.
Without having a discussion, but
that's perfect. You
know, well, the point is that, and sometimes maybe you are desperate at the. This is somewhat what people feel about love: is that I meet somebody and I desperately want to be with them. Because that's how we're programmed to be sometimes, is that, like, you know, in the wild, when we're in the wild running through the jungle, we meet somebody and we desperately want to be with them because it's the time of our life where we are emotionally, chemically desperate. And it's to be with the person, to develop that, to continue the, what is it called? Continue the species.
Yeah.
Continuation of the species.
They recreate more people in the planet.
Oh, yeah. And but I, who knows if it's that or if there's some other things and issues going on with somebody starts trusting you. And now that they've put their trust in you, they start get scared. They're scared that they're going
to
be hurt.
You cannot go to the other extreme because I have other chapter when the person call me every 3 months. Hey, how are you? So you don't know you have something or you don't have nothing.
Is it a relationship? Or are they just checking the phone line?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. So we have a lunch, blah, blah, and disappear for 3 months again. So you have to be balanced. Yeah.
So that's being balanced. Now let's look at number two. Studies show that self-fulfillment enhances the quality of romantic partnerships. So again, we're trying to do this evidence-based. Studies show that self-fulfillment enhances the quality of romantic partnerships. So if each person is self-fulfilled through self-development, doing things that they enjoy, studies show that it enhances the quality of the romance. And then lastly, dependency, and this is the opposite, dependency on a partner for happiness is linked to increased relationship strain. So I think we talked about that. It's if you're relying upon your partner for happiness, then they're either going to not meet and not fulfill what you need and you'll be stressed, or they do, but they're making all these efforts to make sure you're happy and then they're strained. And it should be easy, right? Mm-hmm. Relationships should be easy. Relationships are hard work, but they're really easy hard work.
It's dependent on you. Keep going.
It's medium work. It's yes, medium exactly. work. Exactly. That's why we all need psychics. Because they're medium. It's medium work.
Okay.
It's a joke. Where else are we on here? Let's see. Get the right thing going on here. Oh, so we should seek compatibility, not perfection. Is that somebody says, there's no perfect person out there for me. Well, there might not be a perfect person, but there's probably a perfect person for you, which would be somebody compatible with you, not that they're perfect. Relationship research highlights compatibility in values and lifestyle as key to lasting relationships. So again, when we first wrote our book, let's get the right one out here, 90 Day Soulmate, and we were on the radio station being interviewed, there were two psychologists asking about our backgrounds and how a Latina and a gringo could get along with each other. And I
a
just
Latina
was...
and gringa. They don't know the attitudes
don't know.
Backwards.
That's right. So we answered honestly, which was our family values, our upbringing, our education, that there were a lot of similarities. And going back to what this said here is compatibility in values and lifestyles as key to lasting relationships. It wasn't that we were brought up in the same culture, but the values that were instilled in each of us were similar. And that was the key to compatibility, or should say key to a good relationship, was compatibility in values, lifestyle, upbringing.
Yeah, I have to put in the top the values. Values is something that first you need to, the book explain or have a way that you can document what is the value for you.
Yes.
And then I recommend also classify the more high value, more important for you versus the less important. and compare it with your soulmate, because the value can destroy or can be together forever, the relationship.
So, again, we're not trying to sell this book. We're just trying to support this
we
book with evidence.
We can give the book, come on.
Yeah, if you want, take the book. Go ahead. Write a nice little survey about it, whatever.
If we send the book.
What is it called? Write a review of the book? We do this out of passion. We really aren't. We're not.
We don't live with that.
We don't live.
This is
just our fun. We're talking about doing stuff, co-developing. This is like a co-developed thing. It's a pet passion project of us, right?
Mm-hmm.
Pet passion project. It's the three P's.
Yeah.
But we promote our pet passion project.
A lot of pee-pee.
Through this program that we address people.
And process.
And have fun. Fun. Through puns. A lot of puns. Sorry. So here's another one. Studies show that accepting some imperfections in your partner correlates with higher relationship satisfaction. Which, have you heard those people, like, you see them on TikTok or Instagram or whatever, they're like, oh, I'm a difficult person, but I'm worth it. It's like,
I know her.
I'm a difficult person, but I'm worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, people don't want difficult people.
Yeah.
And so this is saying is that when there's some imperfection, you accept it. You're like, this is great. We are different in some ways. No, you're perfect, baby. I'm sorry.
And you too, man.
Oh, thank you. But the point is that the imperfections are so irrelevant when it comes into the giant scheme of things of life and your goals and what you're trying to do, is that, there are going to be things you do differently throughout the day. But at the end of the day, you started here, you ended up there, and you might have gone a few different paths that the other would have wanted.
Yeah.
But if the goal is what you have in mind, the way of getting there is less important. It's like a football team trying to reach the end zone, for anybody who knows football, is that you can run, you can pass, you can punt, you can do all these things to get there. And you may prefer running, and they might prefer passing, but as long as the goal is to get to the end zone, who cares? I didn't have my favorite play. I didn't run my favorite play today. Yeah, but we scored.
Yeah.
We scored. We made it through another day together. And we're happy. Oh, I can sleep now. So, again, compatibility is more important than perfection. The pursuit of the idealized perfect partner is often linked to chronic dissatisfaction. So going back to these women who are, and I say women, there's guys who do the same thing. I'm so wonderful. I'm tough to deal with, but I'm worth it. That when you think I should have an idealized partner, that the only partner who's good for me is this person who is this, 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 and this, is that if you have this false expectation or this impossible to meet expectation, you'll always be dissatisfied.
I put 40 items, so
I know,
and I got it.
But that's different. So, in this book, 90 Day Soulmate, Lizette has picked 40 items that she wants in her partner. 4D, 4T, or actually T, not D, but 4T. 40. That's more than 39. That's more than the 29 compatibility things of whatever that dating site is. It's 40. And you go, wow, that's a lot. That's being so picky. But they're the ones that she wants. They're not the ones that you want. They're not necessarily the ones that I want. They're not necessarily the ones that anyone wants or the, quote, perfect person is. They're the ones that she likes and wants. So there may be not a lot of people that meet these 40, but they're the 40 that I met.
Yeah.
And so you look at that and go,
offer 40 too.
But that's being so picky. That's being so picky.
No, it's so good.
if you're saying, here are the 40 items I want in a relationship, but here's what I'm willing to give into the relationship, and here are the things that I'm willing to look over and not care about. So these are things I care about, these are things I don't care about. Mm-hmm. You're not picking someone perfect, you're picking people who are compatible with you in these 40 areas.
And the values again.
The values.
And the values you want to...
And a lot of them are
handle,
a lot of them are overlapping, right? Mm-hmm. So you have a value, and that value is associated with other values typically. Mm-hmm. So you have to look at that, right? So if you have like, oh, I want close family, I want to spend a lot of time with family, then there might be stuff. You're going to more weddings, you're going to more family picnics, you're spending more time with the kids. And if you say, you know what, I want to have more social fun with other couples, then maybe that person doesn't spend as much time with the family because they're a more social person. So even though there's 40 items, a lot of them may be associated with each other. You know, so there's correlation between items. But the point is that her list of 40 may only contain 20 of the ones that you would have in your list. And there might be 20 different. The important part of doing this list gets to that law of attraction piece that you hear about so much, is that once in your mind you clearly figure out who you are and what you want, you start actually seeing it in the universe around you.
And then you recognize what you don't want, because always we focus on something that we don't want and we stay there. So yes. I say, I have a friend that she starts to tell me about dating some guy, and then I say, you have a red flag? Yes. It's something that you don't want? Yes. So why are you there? Oh, but I'm feeling something. Yeah, but be clear what you want. You can drive in this kind of situation, handle this situation? No. Okay. That's it.
So that's how it works. Let's continue on with this as we're getting to the end of the show, I believe. The necessity of self-love. So we went from being able to accept somebody else with imperfections. Now, the most important thing is to know thyself. And not only know thyself, but love thyself. Self-love is associated with lower rates of anxiety and depression in relationships. First of all, you're probably pretty good. You don't need to fix a whole bunch of stuff, but you may want to improve some things in your life. That's great. But you got to love yourself and also love your journey as you move towards those improvements. Studies show that self-compassion leads to more positive relationship behaviors. And research suggests that self-love is a predictor of healthier relationship dynamics. So, if I do love myself and like myself and like the journey I'm on, then maybe I'm going to be a little less impacted by a little criticism from my partner. Or when they see a little flaw that maybe they've been overlooking, but they just all of a sudden bothered them, that if I like myself, it's not going to bother me that they say, hey, by the way, you have this thing that maybe you want to address, right?
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps if you have a good self-concept of yourself, you want that feedback because I want to improve more.
Yeah. You have the ability to receive some
criticism.
Feedback.
Sometimes I don't. Sometimes I do. Mm-hmm. And it depends on the mood and how hungry I am. Right?
I'm hungry. Yeah, we're right now.
Yeah. We're hungry. Never have a conversation when you're hungry. I mean, if it's a good conversation, comedy, fine, but if it's like it's late and you're hungry, maybe it's time to step back. We talk about that in some of our programs.
Shows,
About when to step back from a confrontation, mm-hmm. when you're emotionally not set, when you're angry. Emotion, and we talked about this too in the show on emotions, that certain emotions shut off the prefrontal cortex. You can't actually logically think on how to correspond and logically with your partner when you're in certain emotional states, when you're in fear, when you're in anger. Those are two that if you're in fear or you're in anger, your prefrontal cortex is shut off because you're in a survival mode emotion. And when you're in survival mode emotions, you can't think clearly. So if you look at those emotions, the six that we talked about last week, seven, there's 100 different things people say. But in those six, there are a couple that if you are in, it's called the survival mode emotion, do not try to have a, I'll call it argument or discussion with your partner when you're in an emotion that shuts off your ability to think.
So go to the dinner,
have a
glass of wine,
have a nice sleep, and then
you can
next
talk.
Next day, you go, what were we talking about? I don't know. It wasn't.
Never mind. No problem.
And how many times are you so upset about something that the next day when you think about it, go, why were we even arguing about that? That's silly. Love is universal, and we hope you find universal love like we have. Have a great week from Lizette
and Jim. See you then.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lizette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.